Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. First, Jane Carpenter from Maine Identity Services will be talking about HR's role when it comes to data breaches and identity theft. Then Colby Colarossi will be here from ADP talking about what you need to know when thinking about choosing a new payroll company. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Jane Carpenter. She's from Maine Identity Services. We're talking about data breaches and identity theft and how this can affect, yes, even HR professionals and business leaders across the state. Actually, across the country. Let's be honest about that. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Dave.
Well, let's start with some basic stuff here. Before we get into, obviously, about you and the company and all that, let's just get a little bit of education out there. What is really the difference between identity theft, data breaches? You know, there's a lot of technical terms here. Let's give some identification of what these terms mean.
Sure, I'd be happy to. We tend to provide a description for scams, data breaches, and identity theft, because a lot of times people refer to them sort of interchangeably, and they're actually different types of criminal activity. So a scam, I think everybody's familiar with that. They're sometimes called crimes of persuasion. With the scam, the person who's being scammed is enticed to sort of voluntarily give up information or voluntarily give up money, usually. A data breach occurs when an entity that's been entrusted with personal information, and generally there's that information includes things like a social security number, a date of birth. It might be an account for a bank or for a credit card company. And with the data breach, an entity that's been entrusted with that information has a lapse in their security so that the information suddenly becomes available to people who shouldn't have it as available. And I'll also say that maybe something for your listeners to think about as HR professionals is how much of the information they actually have at their fingertips involves that kind of personally identifying information.
Is there a, we all know this risk, right, with everything we do. So
right.
What is the real risk of this happening? And I certainly can imagine that over the last few years, the risk has increased. But what's the real risk? I mean, a lot of people say, well, yeah, I know it can happen, but I'm just a small business. I'm just, you know, I have maybe 5-6 employees. You know, how much real risk could I possibly have?
Well, it's an excellent question, and it's a perception that maybe you and I can try to help correct today with our talk. Small businesses are generally more likely to be a victim of a data breach than a larger corporation. And as an example, I'll give you a couple of examples. What's been happening with some of these massive data breaches that we hear about, things like the Target data breach and the Home Depot data breach, those data breaches tend to have been caused by a third party that was a smaller business that was a vendor. Because these thieves, unfortunately, are pretty darn smart. And they know that it's likely that a large corporation has spent a lot of money making sure that their information is pretty secure. But a smaller company probably doesn't have those kinds of resources. And so they may be significantly more vulnerable. So now these companies sort of circle the larger corporation looking for an entry point. The entry point generally is going to be the smaller company. The sad thing about that is that statistics have shown, unfortunately, that when there is a data breach of a smaller company, many of those companies are out of business within 2 years. So there's a huge impact, and it's a significant concern.
So, you know, there are options, certainly for individuals or individual companies out there, in terms of you hear them advertised pretty much all over the, you know, the radio or on TV. Some of these national firms that say, hey, you know, if you do this, you're going to be protected. If you do that, how much of that really focuses on the small business owner? How much does it focus on businesses here in Maine? And is it in it? And is it as simple as simply going out and getting one of these $19.99 packages?
The short answer to that, Dave, is no. Unfortunately, we think that, you know, basically, if you live in the United States, if you live in our culture, if any of your information is stored on technology, if you yourself use technology at all, the likelihood is that at some point, sooner or later, you're going to become a victim of a data breach. Certainly companies, large and small companies, are acquiring all kinds of software. You know, they're putting money into the technology to try to keep their information safe. But if an individual purchasing a $15 a month a credit monitoring type of service, it's really nothing that you can't do yourself. And unfortunately, we feel that it sort of re-victimizes the victim, because what most of these credit monitoring organizations will tell you, if you look at their fine print either on their TV commercial or a print ad or on their website, there's a disclaimer in there somewhere, and it may be really, really small, and you may need a magnifying glass to see it. But what it's going to say is, no one can protect you from identity theft. The two most frequently committed types of identity theft today are income tax fraud, number one, and number two, the use of an existing credit card that in an account that someone's already opened. And these credit monitoring companies can't monitor for either one. The IRS doesn't share its database with anybody. So,
well, you know, so you're talking about two very common identity thefts, and I think, you know, gosh knows, I've even had my credit cards have situations over the years. And to be obviously honest, when those things happen, you call the credit card company, and I'd like to say that they care, but they kind of just go, okay, no problem, and they, right, you know, that's it. I mean, it's almost like it's an accepted fact of what's going to happen. I'm not saying that's right, but that's how it kind of is perceived by most people. So, you know, does that help perpetuate the problem, or does, you know, how does that work with people trying to keep that information more private?
Well, I think where it has the biggest effect is that we like to encourage people, if they've had any sort of a use of a credit card or anything that is identity theft under Maine's law, they need to report it to their local police department. And what happens, Dave, is in a lot of these instances that you just described, where, you know, it's your credit card, you get the call, or you call your credit card company, it's just a basic transaction to them. They say, fine, we'll cancel that card and we'll send you a new card. And people never go the next step, which is to report it to their local police. So what happens as a result is, on a national basis as well as in Maine, identity theft is a significantly underreported crime. And some studies in Maine in particular have shown that the statistics that we have for identity theft really only represent about a third of the actual activity of the crime. It's only getting reported about a third of the time.
I believe that, because I don't know anybody that's reported it to the police. I mean, that's just something that people don't necessarily think about, you know, filing a report with them, either because they're embarrassed or they're frustrated, or it's really just been taken care of by the credit card company, so why bother?
Exactly. And then what happens is those kinds of reports feed both, you know, statewide information for law enforcement, but they also federal funding agencies. So the more underreported it is, the less resources are allocated to try to help with the problem. We've seen, for example, that just in the number of data breaches alone, between the Target data breach, which was announced in November of 2013, and the Anthem data breach, which was announced in February of this year, our best estimates are that 750,000 Mainers had their information exposed in a data breach. That's scary enough, But the even scarier part of it is that we're seeing research that shows that if your information was involved in a data breach, you're four times more likely to be a victim of identity theft. So those data breaches are unfortunately mining a lot of information for the bad guys, who are then going out and actually acting as organized crime now. And they're using the information to get money or goods or services of some sort.
You know, it's interesting. This topic sometimes is one of those quote-unquote scary stories, right? This is one of those things that people don't want to really admit that, you know, things can happen and that their information is not safe. But it is realistic, and there is a sense of personal awareness that you need to have if you're an individual about protecting your information, correct?
Absolutely. And given your show and the folks who I would guess are your listeners, there's also a lot that an HR professional can do to try to protect the information at their fingertips. And one of the great things about being able to talk with you about this is that your audience can actually put some plans into effect, whether they're with a large organization or a small organization, just to try to be more aware about how information is being handled in their, you know, in their office, how they're distributing information across what may be an internal network, because most of the data breaches that we're seeing actually occur. There are bad guys out there in the world somewhere, but they're actually getting in because of an employee who's let them in. So
we're talking with Jane Carpenter. She's from the Maine Identity Services. We're talking about data breaches and identity theft, and certainly how HR plays a role in this. I have one quiz for the audience, and we're going to come back with the answer right after the break. Now, the question is, can a business be a victim of identity theft? You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Jane Carpenter. She is from the Maine Identity Services. We're talking about data breaches and identity theft. Before we left, I asked the question, a quiz for the audience. Can a business be a victim of identity theft? Well, Jane, the answer is?
The answer is yes. Absolutely, it can. Unfortunately, identity theft is an equal opportunity crime, and deceased people can be victims of it, but businesses can be as well. And let me give you a couple of examples. We've had situations where somebody has gotten a hold of some really great software that designs all kinds of documents, and they've been able to use it to design a check. And so you may see a situation where a former employee who's disgruntled receives their last check from the business, and they use that software. They've got the routing number, and they know exactly how the check looks because they've got it in their hands, and they dummy up a whole bunch of checks that look just like it and start trying to cash it. We have other instances where you may see a bad guy that's cloning the website, coming up with a separate website that makes it look as though it's actually the business's website, but they may be changing an address. You know, mail your payments now to XYZ address instead of the business's actual address. So, and then finally, just taking over a business's account by getting in through the computers. So there are a lot of ways that a business can be a victim of identity theft.
You know, one of the things that, because you know this is such a prevalent issue, whether it be data breaches or identity theft, you have principles that you look at, right, in terms of how people can look at this and try to minimize these risks. Talk about what those are and some things that businesses, HR professionals can look to do to really minimize this risk.
I'd be glad to. We have a principle that we go by with our organization, and you know we hope that other organizations might adopt it. And here's what we say. We say that more information is collected and stored by organizations than is actually ever truly needed. And stored information is never secure. Never secure. So there's always a way in. There's always a way to get a hold of the information. The technology will fail at some point, usually because there's a human factor involved. So that's the principle that we sort of promote. And because of that, we would like to see an inventory done among organizations that takes a look at information as if it basically was money in a bank. And when I go out to talk to groups, what I explain is that the role of the HR person now has changed. The information that had no monetary value for years and was just sort of stored in an office somewhere now is worth money. Those records can be taken and used to get a great deal of money. And so we say take a look at your office and think of how the branch of your bank stores money. It's not left out in bundles on the floor. It's, you know, some of it's behind the teller window, some of it is in a vault. And start to look at the kinds of information that your organization retains and look at ways that you can sort of limit access to it. And also after a certain period of time, there's this thing called the right to be forgotten. If you have an employee that's left your organization, how long do you hang on to their information, and where do you store it, and who has access to it? So those are all factors.
Right, and there are certainly legal implications in terms of those statements. There are requirements by federal and state law as to how long employee information, for example, must be kept. And in some cases, if you have claims and other, it could be almost indefinitely. So it is a matter of trying to prioritize things that you need and don't need. And, you know, it's like cleaning out a file in a file cabinet. You just don't think about it in terms of the electronic side of it.
That's exactly right. I can't tell you how many times we've seen examples of data breaches where an office has moved and someone has cleaned out a file cabinet and they've just sort of not checked what they're cleaning out or throwing out. And there will be a bundle of records of people's social security numbers and dates of birth. And in the case of companies that offer health insurance benefits, a lot of times their dependent information might be on there as well. And they're just sort of dumped as a box of paper at the local recycling center.
Yeah, there's a scary thought, but that does happen. You know, the other thing that we talk about, and I've seen this, people don't realize copiers have drives in them now and store everything you put on a copy machine.
That's an excellent point, and you're right. And people don't think of that often, but it's great that you raised it because they should.
Yeah, copy machines, fax machines, everything. They keep all
everything.
That now. Everything. Yep. Everything!
Everything has a brain now. At least everything has a memory now.
I'm not sure I would go with the brain side, but I'll certainly go with the memory side. Okay,
memory.
I'll go with that. So, you know, one of the things you talk about is specific security. And so what do you mean by specific security versus system security?
Okay, well, this sort of harkens back to what I mentioned a little while ago about a bank branch. So what we say is system security is the idea that a lot of organizations have that sort of I'm going to leave the security of the information up to my technology people. We're going to have a computer system, a system of hardware and software, that is going to be adequate to protect all of our needs, and that way we will be protected from anyone breaching the security. The reality is it would be far more secure if folks started to think of this as a different type of security. And so we go back to the branch banking model, and to give you a little more detail about specific security, that says that if you think about going to a branch of your local bank, you walk in, and you walk in through two doors. You don't just walk in from the street. You'll walk in through one door. When that closes, it's like a sally port. You then go into the next door to be on the banking floor. Your bank branch, if it's large enough, may have a guard there, or they may not. The tellers sit behind a high window, and the cash in their drawers is behind that high window so that nobody can sort of reach in and just grab it. Valuables are kept in safe deposit boxes, and cash and other types of negotiable instruments are kept in a vault. So these are kind of all different levels of security. As I said, you don't just walk in and see bundles of cash sort of on the floor that you have to step over when you go to your branch of your bank. And it's the same thing. It's the idea of getting people to appreciate that the information that's at their fingertips in employee records, which really can be all kinds of information, including dates of birth, social security numbers, driver's license information sometimes, visa information sometimes, dependents information. That's what, of course, we saw as a part of the Anthem data breach that was announced last February, and sometimes passport number information because people who are employees may need to travel. So all of that has a monetary value, and with even a part of that information, tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in fraudulent transactions can take place. So just sort of a new way of thinking, a sort of a shift for the HR professional.
We're talking with Jane Carpenter from Maine Identity Securities. We're talking about data breaches and identity theft. You know, Jane, when people are really looking at this as business owners or as senior executives looking at this problem, they think about, oh, I know it's a big problem, but it is a financial issue. And so, right, you know, we're looking at things like data breach, you know, insurance. We're looking at identity theft insurance. We're looking at systems that we're going to put in place. We're going to look at all these things, and it all costs money. And, you know, so are there any things that you can provide or discussion points that you can talk about, or how companies can look at this and think to themselves, how can I do this and afford it?
Yes, I can. And, you know, one of the things that I hope organizations will keep in mind as they approach this is that I know that the people, first, I know people get overwhelmed by this because it's so out of everyone's normal sort of business activities to start thinking about, in the case of a crime, and, you know, what do I do? But the fact of the matter is there are things that can happen that are very, very low cost that can have a real impact on what security, what a data breach might cost. We've seen studies that show that putting together a response plan before a data breach can drop the cost for an organization by as much as 25% per record. And that's the key. I mean, the two things that an organization can do. And my feeling very strongly is that this is a place where this sort of plays to human resources and their sweet spot. There really, other than the technology people, there really isn't any other part of an organization that has a view across all the departments and all the organization. That would be the HR professional. And so this is a wonderful place where there can be some leadership shown by the HR team. And what they can do is to do a couple of things. And maybe I can challenge some of your listeners by asking just a couple of questions.
Sure, go ahead.
And the first question is, you know, do you know, without having to look anything up, without having to go to the website and check and see what's on there, do you know what your organization's data security policy is? What is it? Whether you are a one-person organization or a 1,000-person organization, do you even have a data security policy? And if you think you do, The second question that I have for you is, do you know who's in your building at night? Because my guess is that a lot of organizations that think that they have this, you know, pretty tightly wrapped up may not. I mean, it may be something that's just as simple as, do you know who's in your building at night as a vendor of some sort that may have access to papers that are just left lying on a desk? Is there a policy in your workplace that when people are through for the day, records get put away and locked up? There aren't files that are left on a desk. All of that, so as a first step, it's being secure, trying to tighten everything down before a data breach occurs to, of course, try to prevent that from happening. And the second thing is having a response plan, putting together the basics for a response plan so that, heaven forbid, in the event that it might happen, you're not sort of sitting there dumbfounded, wondering what to do next. And we're just doing those two things across an organization can save that organization a whole lot of money if they unfortunately become a victim of a data breach. There are things, for example, what we've seen in some of the recent incidents that have involved major, major data breaches. One of the first questions that is asked by the regulators is, did your company have a training program for employees to tell them, to tell your employees how to handle secure information and how to keep it secure? And what we're seeing is that when companies are able to answer yes, and they're able to produce a document that proves that they provide regular data security training or information security training for their employees, that the awards in some of those lawsuits drop because the company can demonstrate that, you know, they really have tried. They've really made a good effort to make sure that they're being as secure as they can.
This is great information, Jane. I think you've provided some really good tips for our listeners, both in HR and business owners. Again, we're talking with Jane Carpenter from the Maine Identity Services. We've been talking about data breaches and identity theft, HR professionals, business leaders. This is real, so make sure that you're paying close attention. Of course, after the show, you can go to hrpowerhour.com, and you can listen to the recap of this show, or the show itself, I should say, and then you'll be able to download that and, of course, connect with Jane directly. Her information will be on that link at hrpowerhour.com. Jane, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.